Welcome to episode 36 of Published. Today, I'll speak with our design supervisor here at Greenleaf, Chase Quarterman, about the art and strategy behind cover and interior designs that sell more books and make for the best reader experience.
Welcome to Published, a podcast by Greenleaf Book Group, where we'll discuss the ins and outs of the publishing industry, from writing a book and finding the right publisher to gearing up for a book launch. And now, here's your host, Greenleaf Book Group CEO, Tanya Hall.
Welcome back to Published. In today's episode, we're talking about book design, both cover and interior layout, and what elements of design attract the attention of retail accounts and book buyers. Because despite what our mothers told us, books are judged by their covers, and not only does your book need to be compelling and unique with its content inside, the cover and the interior design, of course, need to represent and reflect that. So here to shed some light on designing books that please both the retail market and the reader is our design supervisor, Chase Quarterman. Let's get into the interview. Hi, Chase. Welcome to Published.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Thank you for joining. So why don't you start by telling us a bit about your background and what you do here at Greenleaf?
Sure. I'm from Jackson, Mississippi. And I have a degree in graphic design, a degree in advertising, a master's degree in advertising, and a master's degree in design. Too many master's degrees. I've worked in advertising. I've done freelance. I've painted full time. I'm kind of an odd job, creatively speaking. And now I design books. Mm-hmm. So I'm design supervisor here at Greenleaf, and I design covers and interiors for our authors.
Awesome. And you do such a great job at it,
Thank you. I must say.
So when we think about the cover design process, I think most people listening would see that as the most creative part of the things that you just mentioned. So can you describe your process to us? How do you approach that when you're assigned a brand new cover design that has to represent a brand new book?
Absolutely. So I always start with sketches. Every designer is different. Some designers are going to start right on the computer. When I start on the computer, I always get creative blockage. I'm not really sure why, but I tend to get married to things early on, or I get stymied. So I by sketching, by looking at concepts, by trying to create something with my hands instead of with pixels, conceptually, the ideation happens more organically. Once I have all my sketches, I develop it on the computer after that. And that's where sometimes like happy accidents happen, unexpected color combinations, accidentally push the wrong button or hotkey. And then I love when that happens, the planets align, and then I have an interesting option for a client, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many do you typically end up with that you're proud to show?
I show four, ultimately to the author. Throughout the process, I probably develop maybe 30.
Oh my gosh.
Sometimes more than that, and it can be a little daunting. Our art director, Neil, gets a lot of images from me. So it's, weeding through it all and getting opinions, it can be very subjective. But by the end of it, we have four good ones for the author.
Wow. So it's
hopefully, knock on wood.
Yeah, quite a process in
yes.
Which way you cut it. So when we think about a quote, good or great cover design, what are some of the elements that are critical for that book to do well in retail? And I guess what we're looking for there is what makes it pop, as we like to say in publishing,
yeah,
so that someone is intrigued and picks it up.
Totally. The first thing that authors should be looking for is something that's genre appropriate. So if it's, let's just say fiction and nonfiction. Fiction is more expressive and can be more experimental. Nonfiction should be a little more conservative, a little more restrained, using negative space or open space more frequently. Not crazy typography. Occasionally, there's always exceptions to the rule, mm-hmm. but typically on the business side of things or economic side of things, like this, as a designer, as a creative person, this is where I maybe go overboard, and the team has to kind of reel me back in and say, okay, this is great for fiction, but this is not good for this business book or this economics book. It turns into, you know, something's more like abstract expressionism, and it shouldn't be. It should be something that is a simple communication of the content, ultimately. So I'm giving form to content.
Yeah, it's interesting when we talk about design and genre because it has to fit in and stand out at the same time.
Definitely. And I think that's an important part there. Like, make it unique. Not only should it be genre appropriate, but it should be custom. It should be unique. It could potentially be a brand for an author. Not just a generic vanilla cover. Something that, like you say, pops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No goldfish jumping out of a bowl.
Goldfish jumping out of a bowl, man with suitcase, piggy bank.
Climbing a ladder.
Right, climbing ladder. And it's easy to fall back on some of those sometimes and try to like, okay, can I do something new with that trope? But it's hard and you shouldn't. Like in advertising, those were, you know, the same cliches as well. And it could be really derivative and we don't want that. We want something fresh, but relatable to the author's personality that they're projecting through their writing.
Yeah, for mm-hmm. sure. Well said. So let's move on to interior design. I think sometimes when I talk to authors, they get a little confused looking. I mean, interior design, it's not a coffee table book, but an interior really of the book really does need to be designed to serve Definitely. The reader well. I'm not going to put words in your mouth here, but can you tell us why that's so important and what are some of the hallmarks of a strong interior design?
Sure. This is something that authors often overlook. The cover design is the hero and receives all the attention. And by the time we get to the interior, it's kind of like a shrug. You know, people are way more focused on the cover. The interior is the content. It's important for people to be able to relate to it, read it, without being distracted by it. It should also relate to the cover. So if there's symbolism already established on the cover, it should be reflected in the interior. I always fall back on classic, when we talk about body copy, the small type, the small stuff like, you know, 10 to 12 point type. People don't, or they shouldn't have to think about what the type is and the attributes of the type and be distracted by it. Like, for instance, I was reading a book recently that was completely distracting because of the body copy type. And it took me out of the content. It even gave me a migraine because it was just such a weird type choice for a long form, small piece of type. I always choose the classic typefaces from the Renaissance, like Garamond is one that I use frequently. Caslon and Baskerville from the 18th century, they're also really great. Saban. Some of these things, I mean, Times New Roman is one that I think most people go back to because of essays, but it's not a great book typeface for some reason. It's too thin. But authors need to consider the typography and the layout of their interior because that's their blood, sweat, and tears put into a concrete form.
Yeah, and you're right. Fonts convey moods.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's obvious. You know, if it's Comic Sans or something, don't put your book in Comic Sans.
Right. Please, please, please
don't. If you learn one thing in today's podcast, don't do that. But it's also, the reader is spending the majority of their experience, quote, with the author in that interior. And
absolutely.
So it's definitely an opportunity to connect and reinforce a brand of some sort.
Definitely. So the cover is a first impression and the interior is the long-term relationship. So you should definitely care about it.
You date the cover and marry the interior.
Right, exactly. Definitely. Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the collaboration between designer and author.
Okay.
Here at Greenleaf, not every publishing company is like this, but we have a collaborative model, of course, where the author technically has, well, not technically, they do have creative control. You can speak to this better than I can, but it seems 9 times out of 10, they defer to us as the experts here. But occasionally there are considerations that we have to be mindful of, like maybe they have existing branding for their company that we have to work around,
mm-hmm.
or maybe we're just really having a hard time being of the same mind, let's say that.
Yeah.
So how do you toe that line? How do you come to an agreement when you're working with someone who maybe doesn't have the same creative vision as you? How do you frame that?
Sure. You have to be diplomatic. In the initial conversation with the author, you, as a designer, you get a gist for their vision for it, doesn't need to be on brand, doesn't need to reflect their color combinations for their business? Do they have symbolism that they like? Do they have textures that they use on their site that could reflect more on into this book? I actually prefer the authors to have some kind of aesthetic vision first thing. Otherwise, my worst experiences in cover design and just book design in general were when the authors mentioned that they didn't really care, or they were open to me just doing whatever, or they said that, you know, they gave me free rein thinking that that was exactly what I wanted, when it's kind of a big guessing game.
Right.
And usually it turns out when they do that, I create things and then they have opinions when I return the design. So it's really good for them to have a general idea going into it about, yeah, I like this and I don't like this. So then it puts up roadblocks for me so I don't go in wrong directions. That's always very helpful. And I'm very flexible with it. Design is, you know, all things to all people, as long as it's appropriate for the audience, yeah, and the genre, then mm-hmm. it's a good direction to go in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And when we think about cover design, we see a lot of books that are submitted to us here at Greenleaf for distribution. For those who don't know what I mean by that, it's the sales part of the services that we provide that are already mm-hmm. produced, and we look at them and go, oh gosh, if only you had done something different with the cover. Like there's a certain class of major no-nos that are almost yes. guaranteed to prohibit a book from making it into retail stores. So can you maybe walk us through a few of those no-nos?
Totally. So we've already talked about genre appropriateness, wacky images that have nothing to do with the interior, clashing typography with images, no low contrast with typography, weird novelty typefaces that were a free download and the metrics are all off, the spacing is bad. There's like a huge laundry list of really bad things that you should avoid with cover designs. But the big one is just, as long as it's appropriate, you want to make sure it's true to the content. You want to make sure that it's not, if the interior is goofy, you shouldn't design, humorous. You shouldn't design something that looks serious. You would think this is common sense, but, you know.
It's not.
Sometimes people just don't think about that. Yeah.
But you're right. There is the rules are there to be broken, I guess. And, you know, once upon a time, I would have said to every author, do not put your own picture on the cover of your book.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And yet we have examples in our own list where that turned out to be completely appropriate.
Right. Right. If the author is known to their audience and popular and recognizable, then that's a good idea. If they're not, then it's not a good idea. Also, going back to the customizable poppy covers that we discussed, you don't want a forgettable cover. You don't want to be so like, okay, if we're going to do a nonfiction or business or economics cover, we don't want to make it so restrained that it's like, okay, I've forgotten it 2 seconds later, a goldfish memory. It's just, you want something that kind of burns into the mind, but also is appropriate and speaks to what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And when you're thinking about these designs, you said you initially sketched them. Are you also thinking about things like printing technology and sort of the effects,
yes.
like ink on foil? Is that something you kind of add on later as, oh, I could also do this?
It depends. I mean, sometimes early on the technology is part of the concept. And sometimes it can happen at the latter part when we have a specs meeting at the very end of it all. And we, as a team, can decide, oh, you know what, this would look really good with a foil stamp. Or this would look really good with this certain kind of coating that has this certain vibe or that would project whatever the narrative is about. And so it can happen at any stage of the creative process. It's weird how that happens, but mm-hmm. yeah, it just pops in there.
One of these days, you'll give me a book with glitter. I keep waiting.
Please, no. And Comic Sans.
Yeah.
Right.
It's been 15 years. Where's my glitter book?
Yeah, where's the glitter book?
All right, Chase, true or false? When it comes to cover design, less is more.
I'm going to give an answer that I hate, and it's true and false. Like I'm not a big fan of yes and no answers to questions, but I'd say mostly true, because in design, you know, minimalism has become a current theme, a popular direction that people go into, and they can go kind of too far into minimalism. The less is more thing, it was a quote from Mies van der Rohe, a famous architect. Graphic designers use it all the time. And it's true. Like, we want to fill up space. If there's dead space there, designers want to put something there. That's an initial reaction, like a gut reaction. Like, okay, that needs something. It needs a line. It needs a symbol. But that's not always a good idea. Most of the time, it's not a good idea. Occasionally, more can be good if it's appropriate, if you're trying to show a lot of detail and emphasize one little aspect of it so that you have a differentiation. So, for instance, if there's a really complicated pattern that I've created in Adobe Illustrator, and it's from a distance, there's a lot going on, a lot of symbols packed all together, I can differentiate one symbol by changing the color, and it kind of hones your eye into it as a focal point. So it's a really complex cover with a lot of different symbols, and maybe type is in there as well, but you can also intrigue people with detail. Yeah, so that's my yes and no.
I kind of thought you were going to say something to that effect.
So yeah.
A little bit of a leading question, I
right.
guess.
Right. It depends. That's the answer.
Awesome. Well, it's such a fascinating topic, and we all dork out on design over here at Greenleaf. So thank you so much for joining us and for
Absolutely.
All that you
thank
do.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's it for our episode today. We hope you enjoyed learning about book designs that sell. For notes and resources from today's show, go to greenleafbookgroup.com/episode36. You can also find advice for writing, publishing, and promoting your work in my book, Ideas, Influence, and Income, which you can learn about at ideasinfluenceandincome.com. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes. It means a lot to have your feedback and helps us make sure we're answering your publishing questions. A big thank you to Eleanor Fishbourne, who produces the published podcast. We'll be back next month with another new episode.
Thanks for listening to Published. To learn more, please visit greenleafbookgroup.com. And remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.